speaking with West Michigan Congressman Fred Upton. And given that this is Friday, November 1st, and there were some hearings during the last week that you led in the House Energy and Commerce Committee on the Affordable Care Act, I think today we're talking about health care. Thank you for being here.
Always a pleasure.
Okay, let's start with this hearing. The Health and Human Services Secretary Kathleen Sebelius was there. Do you think you learned much?
Well, we did. We got a lot of questions out there. We frankly had wished that she could have been there the week before when we had the contractors. Then you can always have a little give and take, but that's the way things go. But, you know, this is – I want to say that we've had about 8 or 9 hearings over the last 10 months or so as to the rollout of the Affordable Care Act, or Obamacare, as the president refers to it himself. So it's not meant as a slight in any way. But, you know, the big issue that we started to focus on in the last couple weeks was, you know, the administration, HHS, told us from almost the start, but certainly in the months leading up to the October 1st rollout date, that they'd be ready. Not a problem. And here we are a month into it, and we're just getting some, you know, we don't know if these numbers are right or not, but there was a report earlier today that came out that the media presented. They said less than, I think, 500 people across the nation actually signed up. I mean, we'll get these numbers for sure. We're going to do another hearing in December. So what are the problems with this, with the rollout? You know, the website was down the entire time that we had the hearing. It was down the day before. It was down last weekend. There are real issues relating to the rollout of this. And frankly, that ought to be the easy part. Literally logging on and figuring out, you know, signing up to be a participant. Real questions arose in the committee, and we're going to follow up on these, as to the security of the information that people log in on. Is it really a hacker's dream? Are people's identity going to be stolen? They're apparently making new lines, new computer lines every day. And are they secure from end-to-end testing? We don't know that that's true or not true. And so we followed up with legislation on that. The next question is, if that's the easy part, signing people up, what happens when that individual goes to the doctor or the hospital? This week, I sat down with a number of hospitals. They truly are very concerned about that person who shows up on January 5th. They say they have insurance. Who knows if they necessarily if they do or not? Maybe they do. Did the system work? They're going to treat them, but are they going to get paid? I mean, this could be even a tougher issue down the line. And then, of course, the other question is, and we're certainly finding that out in our district, so many people's individual policies are being canceled. I heard last night that 3 states, including the entire state of Kentucky, was on the news. Everyone who had an individual policy, it's being canceled. Now, when the Affordable Care Act was passed, enacted into law back in March of 2010, there was a provision there that it grandfathered all individual policies. And, of course, if this president is known for anything, just like President Reagan was, you know, Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall, for this president it's been, if you like your health care, you can keep it. In fact, even in September he said, if you like your health care, you don't have to do anything because you're going to be able to keep it. Well, that's not the case. And we're having a lot of constituents contact us. Their policies are being canceled. And as they try to find something else, they're finding that their premiums are going up maybe even 100 or 200%, even 400%. The deductibles are going up in the thousands of dollars, and they're left holding the bag. And if the law stays the way that it is, are going to be actually paying a penalty by not finding some type of replacement. So I introduced legislation earlier this week. I'm trying to get it on the fast track. Have nearly 100 co-sponsors, I want to say, thus far that have signed up for this. And it says that, in essence, if you had an individual policy as of January of this year, you are gonna have that policy grandfathered. You're not gonna have to worry about something else. Of course, you can always change, but not necessarily are you gonna be canceled because of the requirements by the ACA, American Affordable Care Act, onto that insurance company.
So it applies to individual policies.
That's right. It's only individual.
So if you're working for a company which decides to change its health plan,
this
isn't going to cover
it. Yep,
okay.
That's right.
I want to go back to what you said about the website being the easy part of this.
It should be the easy part.
Should be Medicare Part D had big problems with its website when it started out. The Massachusetts health care plan, which the Affordable Care Act or Obamacare is loosely based on at least, had problems with its website when it launched. Perhaps is the website more difficult than you're giving it credit for?
Well, a couple things, a couple big differences. First of all, the prescription drug benefit or Medicare Part D, which President Bush, that was a signature issue for him. I supported it as well. That was a voluntary program. And you weren't faced with a penalty if you didn't sign up. And I helped with that rollout. You'll recall that individuals sign up for it, and so whether you looked at your own health needs, in Michigan you have a couple dozen different plans that one can choose from based on your health needs and what copays and a variety of different things. It's pretty easy to figure out. And the industry themselves, I remember going here in Kalamazoo to the Walgreens and small mom-and-pop pharmacies as well. They really initiated and were prepared to help people walk through, particularly seniors. You're only eligible if you're on Medicare, so those over 65. My bet is that the rollout was, though there were glitches, I'm not denying that, I think there were a lot more people signing up earlier on than now. But again, the big difference is that was voluntary. This is mandatory, and people aren't actually losing their insurance.
People did not lose it under
millions of people, literally, of individual policies that are being lost because of the act itself.
The New Republic wrote about the hearings, and they raised the question of whether or not the hearings are designed to actually make the Affordable Care Act work, or if they're just merely being held to try and perhaps take a little political skin out of someone's hide.
Well, I would disagree with that. We have a responsibility. We have, as taxpayers, as the Secretary indicated, we've spent hundreds of millions of dollars on the rollout. Who knows how much it's going to cost to try and get this thing, the train back on the track again. We'll get those answers later on. But we have an oversight authority. A couple committees have that. And again, we were asking, this was not a Johnny-come-lately deal. We've had a number of hearings. And, the administration assured us, even up to 2 weeks before the October 1st rollout, that everything was fine. Yet I heard a report on the news again earlier this week saying that, in fact, a month out, they knew that they were in trouble. They not confessed that to us. I don't know where that information came from. But our objective is, we're looking after the taxpayer dollars. And we've had a lot of concerns across the country regarding this. And I think it is our responsibility to have the hearings that we've had. And it was the Secretary of HHS. She should be the lead spokesperson. She should be able to defend exactly what they're doing, and was the sole witness that we had in a bipartisan hearing.
But is there let me take you out of this for a moment. Let's talk about other Republicans, because there have been many more vociferous critics. You've been a pretty staunch critic of Obamacare.
I've not called for a resignation.
Right. And you have not, perhaps been as harsh as some other critics have of Obamacare, as much as you have said you don't like it, and as much as you said you'd like it repealed, those sort of things. But I suppose what some other people are wondering here is there a genuine effort to try and fix it, or is the effort here to just try and watch the train go off the rails so badly that no one's left with any choice but to scrap it?
Well, the president himself has made a number of changes to it. So last summer, July, he delayed the business mandate. Wasn't ready. He didn't really have the authority under the law to do that. But what he in essence did was delay the regulation so that they couldn't be promulgated, which then accounts for the delay. As you know, he's done a number of waivers for a variety of different reasons. It's one of the reasons why I introduced the legislation earlier this week that for a year, not permanently, but for a year, says if you had that individual policy, that'll work and be consistent with the law. That doesn't necessarily undermine it, but clearly, I think to most Americans that try to navigate through this new website, it's not working. And it is the law. I accept that. We had an election since then. It's not going to get overturned as long as President Obama's there and the numbers are there. So let's. But I think we have the duty and the right to oversee this program, which, as you know, accounts for a pretty good share of America's economy.
There will at some point be another vote on raising the debt ceiling or keeping the government open. Do you expect to be in the position again where there will be Republicans saying, let's tie something in Obamacare or the Affordable Care Act to our vote on a continuing resolution or raising the debt ceiling?
You know, you're bringing up a bad dream. Okay. As you know, I was one of the 87 Republicans to get out of the mess that we were in. And we got a number of dates now in the future, the first one being January 15th. So the continuing resolution expires on the 15th, and so we need to address that. My sense is, and negotiations really haven't started yet, my sense is that we'll not have a shutdown. There were no winners for sure last month. We'll not have a shutdown and probably look at a continuing resolution that takes us through the balance of the year, so through the fiscal year, September 30th. And my sense is that there'll be a number of reforms there. I don't know. No decisions made as to any of them will be related to the Affordable Care Act. I do know that in the meeting that I had with the president, it's one of the handful of Republicans, or maybe a dozen or so of us, that were there a couple weeks ago on the negotiating, you know, to try and find a resolution to the problems that we're having. We talked about the issue of the medical device repeal, which for us here, obviously in Kalamazoo, Stryker is going to pay in the neighborhood of about $95 million this year. They laid off 1,000 folks last year to get ready for this thing. And the president in our discussion indicated that he didn't look at that necessarily as an Affordable Care Act / Obamacare issue versus a budget issue. To me, that's a good thing because we can figure out how we can repeal this thing and really focus on jobs, which it clearly does here in our region. But we're not going to have the same battle as we had in October, you know, come January. I would be very surprised if that happened. Now, as it relates to the debt ceiling, again, these two issues are different, the funding of the government, the continuing resolution, and the debt ceiling.
Would you agree the debt ceiling is a much more serious issue?
It is a very serious issue, and certainly, and I was one, man, you cannot default. That would send internationally, domestically, real chaos that I don't know how long it would take to recover, maybe even a generation. So that debt ceiling is now set for February 7th, so they've got a different date than the continuing resolution. And the president then still has what's called extraordinary measures that he can take so that the date doesn't – it's not actually that date. It can be a couple months later, just like the previous date was May and then it was, you know, October. So he's going to have – we've got a longer time to try and negotiate this. What I'd like to see is that, as much as I'd like to have a balanced budget, I support one. I know that you can't do it in the next 5 months. But we ought to be on a path that will get there. And to do that, you're going to need to look at, everything is going to be on the table. And you're going to need, in my view, to negotiate an increase in that debt ceiling with savings in other areas. And that's what will be negotiated and discussed. And again, that probably won't start until the first of the year or so.
There are a fair number of economists that will make the argument, and not all of them are necessarily left-leaning.
Don't tell me that they want a default.
No, not that they want
I actually had a colleague, I think, that said, by defaulting, it'll help the market. And went, there's oh, man.
You have a few colleagues that wouldn't mind defaulting. Is that correct?
Correct. You are correct. Now, don't count me in with them. But
understood.
I do.
Understood. No, the argument that some economists have made that the real key to getting on some sort of a path to a balanced budget is first fixing the economy so more people are getting back to work. Would you agree?
Yep. Growth has to be part of this. And, you know, it's you know, we've taken a better turn here. Unemployment isn't as high as it should be. It's still too high.
Employment.
Yeah, unemployment. Unemployment is still too high.
It's still too high.
Unemployment is still too high. But what we need to be in, and this I think could be well be part of some agreement as we move forward, and that is tax reform. So in our district here, Allegan County, their largest employer, Perrigo, in this summer, they announced that they're moving their headquarters from Allegan, or maybe New Jersey, but I mean the U.S., to Ireland. Why? Tax considerations. We have the highest corporate tax rate in the world. Ireland is one of the lowest. They're going to go from like 35% to 10.5% by moving that headquarters. That needs to change. We need a tax system that rewards job creation here and prevents, you know, jobs from going overseas. We ought to be sending products, not jobs. And I am hopeful, encouraged. The next word is optimistic, but I'm not using that word yet, that we will begin to see real tax reform emerge in this Congress that clearly has to be bipartisan because you got a Democratic Senate and Republican House. But Dave Camp, who chairs the Ways and Means Committee from Michigan, and Max Baucus, Democrat, chairs the Senate Finance Committee, are committed to working together, and I think you will in the upcoming weeks begin to see a package emerge that in fact will solve some of these things, and as a growth element then be part of a way that we can reduce the deficit and focus too on the debt ceiling, which ultimately has to be raised next year to avoid default.
But the last time we had you in here, we talked about how there's a kind of a limited time window here before the end of the year.
We still have time. There's still sand in the dial. It'll still work.
But tax reform is a big, complex issue.
It is.
And
they're going to be moving very quickly when we get back.
Yeah, because if we hit January 1st, 2014, and nothing's been done, are we officially into an election year, and does it make it more difficult?
No. I think you can bleed a couple issues into 2014. That's one of them. Immigration reform I'm a pro-immigration proponent or immigrate. You know, we got to fix the current system. It's broken. Doing nothing perpetuates that. And I'm hopeful again that we can begin to see elements of immigration reform move through the House. Remember, the Senate did pass legislation last. I want to say it was in May. They took a whole month, but again, I feel that you're going to be able to see that start in the House. A couple bills have emerged out of committee and waiting floor action, so I'm hoping before Thanksgiving we'll be able to see some type of movement on that issue. But again, tax reform, I think, does move into next year and can be done without the element of politics, an election year, stopping it in its tracks.
Does that Senate bill, as it stands, have any chance of getting through the House, or is it going to have to be the immigration bill I'm talking about? Is that going to have to be modified significantly to get through the
House? Well, you know, Senator Schumer said in September that the approach that was likely to happen in the House, taking smaller elements of it, so you have, we call it Help the Dreamers, the kids that came here very young, border security, legal status, visas, H-1B visas, which help the higher educated, you know, folks. That approach of taking those individual items, knowing that they'll be bipartisan, he said he was, and he used the word optimistic, that approach could work to get meaningful immigration reform. And I share that view.
I'm going to go back to healthcare for a moment because you have said many times that Republicans do have ideas and have some reform proposals that could work. One of the things we keep hearing from critics of the Affordable Care Act or Obamacare is that it's too complex. That's also what some defenders say, is that, you know, we're going to have problems because it's a very complex bill. Isn't health care reform by its nature in a country this big going to be a complex issue?
It is complex. And, yeah, there's no question that it is. I mean, the forms, the choices people, you know, for me, I want to see people have more choices. I want incentives for employers for them to offer insurance. I support health savings accounts. I support folks actually seeing what the costs are, so they can determine. Whoa, you know, I had an individual in the Richland Rotary this last week. I want to say it was his son had three stitches, and the bill was $1,800, and not all the bills are in yet. So I think it's folks being aware of what the costs are, I think, are critical as we try to reduce costs. Tort reform, that's something the president indicated that he supports. I've not heard him talk about that lately, but he certainly did. Shopping for insurance across state lines, again, that provides more options that people can have, which is actually maybe similar along to this, what we're trying to do on my legislation to allow the individual policies to stand because, you know, people are able to determine for themselves, you know, maybe I don't want that mandate. Maybe I don't want that, you know, certain coverage and, you know, I'll pay a lower cost based on a sliding scale and the deductible, whatever it might be. So those are the things that we ought to be looking to expand versus, in essence, almost a one-size-fits-all. You got to be on the system. If you're not, you're going to get fined. You know, even though you thought that your plan was grandfathered as it was enacted, the regulations changed, and because of that, the Wall Street Journal pointed out earlier this week that $5 increase in the pay in the copay means that, in fact, that whole policy now is shelved, and you've got to get something else. I mean, it has become more complicated than that, and I don't think that's where we should have gone, which is one of the reasons I opposed it. And we sort of thought it was going to happen this way.
Doesn't the problems with the website also indicate, though, there are a lot of people out there that are shopping? And does this perhaps indicate just how big?
Yeah. The administration won't give us the numbers, even though the contractor said the week before, oh, we've got the numbers, but we're not going to share them with you unless we get HHS's consent to tell you what they are. This week, not only before Ways and Means, as well as our committee, they said that they would not share the numbers for another couple of weeks. We look forward to having those numbers. We asked the question then if the secretary would come back and testify the first week in December to talk about the rollout for the first 2 months. She said she would. Now, we won't do a full committee hearing. It won't be like we did this week. It'll be a subcommittee that will do that. But, you know, we're anxious to see what those numbers are. And we know some anecdotal evidence that appears as though a lot more people signed up for the Medicaid section because states have to expand their Medicaid rolls than actually signed up for the exchanges. But we'll see when those numbers come out. It's frustrating that we didn't get them. And we're hearing, you know, sad stories across the country, but we'll – and, you know, I don't know that they will know how many actually – maybe they do – how many people actually entered the website and then what was the completion rate at the end. My bet is it was pretty bad. Would not get you a passing grade.
Is there also something, though, to looking at individual states? Because there are states which have expanded Medicaid, others which have still not. There are states that are running their own exchanges, and some states relying on the federal ones. I mean, should all of this be looked at to figure out if there may be some more micro-level problems?
I think we'll try. But until they start sharing some of the numbers with us, it's hard to tell what's happened.